The stone rejected by the builder. Of course, this is a very common phrase in Christianity now. But could you imagine? Could you imagine? You're building your house, and you come up to the contractor and say, "Hey, that drywall looks kind of funny." "Yeah, it's reclaimed. It's real neat." "Excuse me?" "Yeah, we pulled it out of this house." "Why did you pull it out of the house?" "Ah, they were getting rid of it." "Why didn't you just go to, you know, Lowe's and buy fresh drywall?" "Oh, this is much cheaper." "Okay, are you charging me less?" "No." You know that's how that would go, right? Imagine what the way you would feel. Your builder walks up to you and said, "Hey, we're going to use these reclaimed studs to be the support for your house." You might sit there and go, "Excuse me, I'm going to need a different person to run this job." That's what we would do, right? And yet this is the image that the Lord uses. The stone rebuilded by the rejectors, by the builders. The stone rejected by the builders. There we go. This is even in English. I don't know why it's so hard. Has become the cornerstone. Now, ordinarily, there's a reason why builders would reject a piece of stone. There's some flaw in it. But whatever would cause it to be rejected clearly doesn't need to be on the most important piece of the whole structure. The thing that bears all the weight. Of course, the analogy was being prophesied in the Psalms and the connection being drawn by St. Peter is that the builders messed up. They actually had something very precious that they rejected. You think about how, you know, there's certain things in the modern world that would be nonsensical to us, right? Like, this never happens anymore, but like, if you were in your backyard and all of a sudden oil started welling up out of your backyard, what would you do? You would rejoice. You'd throw a party. You'd probably sit there and go, "Okay, now what do I do with this? Because this is an ecological disaster. I don't necessarily know an oil company. I could just be like, hey, Exxon, come see." But you would rejoice. You know, there's places in the ancient world where that happened. That was a real disaster. They didn't want that oil in their backyard. They had nothing to use it for, right? All these things that our modern world is built on, that our ancient ancestors, like, they had no clue how precious this thing could be. And they just, you know, threw away, gave it a pass. And the reality of the matter is, sometimes we don't know how precious the thing right in front of us is. But you and I have been given the great gift that there is no mistaking how precious Jesus Christ is. Not for us anymore. Like, we know the end of the story. Pharisees didn't know the end of the story. Now, there's an argument to be made that the Pharisees couldn't see beyond the edge of their own noses, which is why they made the decisions that they made. But for us, who know the end of the story, who have the gift of faith, who have been initiated into the community, we know exactly how precious this Jesus is. The author of life they put to death. And of course, it's not like we're innocent either. We've just accepted his gift of grace. Because all of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And quite honestly, it doesn't take a whole lot to suddenly send us hurtling down a terrible road. The way to follow Jesus is narrow. And it's not because I started thinking the wrong things. It's generally because I started doing the wrong thing. And it starts with simple stuff. You know, they used to tell us in seminary, right? It starts with, I don't need to go pray today. Or I can pray just a little bit today. Or I can skip my breviary. And then compromise, 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 compromise. And all of a sudden you're on a slippery slope. You didn't even realize you were getting off. Learn the lesson from Pharisees, right? Don't reject the obvious that's right in front of you. Instead, follow Jesus.